now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. The title of today's show is The Obama Era. I want to think about what life is like, not just under President Obama, but under the era which I think Obama will bring to America. When Colin Powell endorsed Barack Obama, he talked about him as a transformational figure. What a great word. To me, what Powell was saying is that Obama will not just be president of the United States, but will transform the United States in positive ways. In fact, in some ways, just his mere election already has. It seems to me that Obama will not be a president like Bill Clinton, even though I, you know, still retain a lot of respect and affection for Bill Clinton, or Jimmy Carter, but more of one that changes things. I mean, to me, I look back and at the election of 1932 is the last Democratic election where we had a transformation in America, the election of Franklin Roosevelt. Some have compared him to John F. Kennedy. But John Kennedy, and I like John Kennedy a lot, you really have to put him together with Johnson before you see a transformation. Of course, Kennedy's life was cut short. I can't exactly blame the man. But the Kennedy-Johnson era together was transformational. Kennedy, the young man, appearing after the old President Eisenhower, giving a lot of youth hope. That certainly reminds one of Obama. But Johnson did the real work. Franklin, if it wasn't for Vietnam, I think Johnson would be remembered as one of America's greatest presidents. Of course, to say if it wasn't for Vietnam is kind of like saying, apart from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? But given that the Vietnam was an absolute disgrace to President Johnson, if we are to set that absolute disgrace aside, I mean, this is the man who led to the fulfillment of civil rights. Obviously, it wasn't President Johnson's idea. This is something that Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and generations going back to Pullman Porters and W.B. Du Bois and A. Philip Randolph had done and prepared, and Thurgood Marshall, and, well, the names of the heroes, there's just so many of them. But as Hillary Clinton said, and I think correctly in the primary, it did take a president, in this case Lyndon Johnson, to sign the bill that finally stuck a stake through the evil that was Jim Crow in the South, and really to discrimination across the country. With the Voting Rights Act, and not just in the era of civil rights, but things like the war on poverty, rural electrification, the idea that people in rural areas still deserve electricity and roads, the idea that, people forget, Lyndon Johnson didn't just help black people. He helped a lot of poor white people, too, with his war on poverty. So the 60s were a transformation. 1932 was a transformation. I think it's fair to say, as much as I might not appreciate it, that historically 1980 was a transformational election too. Backward. Ronald Reagan definitely transformed this country from the country of the 60s and 70s, one that was willing and open to look at helping others, a communal country that looked out for everyone's needs, to, well, me first. There's a reason why the 1980s are considered the selfish generation, and some of that continued right up through the 90s and the era of George W. Bush. So what will the Obama era be like? In many ways, I think it takes us back to the future, if you will, 1960, 1932, presidents that did care about all Americans, not just the super wealthy, but also presidents who look to the future, who are willing to try new things. I mean, if you look at an explosion of government activity helping Americans, you see them in mostly two eras, the 1930s and the 1960s, sometimes including even into Republicans. I mean, Richard Nixon would be considered a liberal today based on issues like caring for the environment, the Environmental Protection Agency, and so forth. To me, an Obama era will transform the populace as well as the Democratic and the Republican parties. Now, obviously, we're just at the beginning. There's no real historical way to evaluate an era when the era has just begun. I mean, if anything, I guess you could argue it began in 06 with the Democratic takeover of Congress. But we have a long way to go. And, you know, Obama is not perfect. He could mess it up. But, heck, I've got high hope. The guy's going to talk about hope and change. At least I can believe in this. There's going to be hope and there's going to be change. And I was thinking about my conversation. Okay, you can call it an argument. It was pretty heated. With my colleague, the Republican strategist Mike Lane. Many of you heard long excerpts of that yesterday. And Mike Lane was advising Democrats and the new president not to go too far. That the first thing Republicans, in this case Mike Lane, wants Obama to do is to renege on his campaign promise of raising taxes of those that earn over $250,000. It was Mike Lane's perverse analysis, I guess, that he felt that saying he was going to tax super-rich people actually, Mike Lane thought, was a plus, that people voted for him for that reason, and that he should do the, statesman-like thing and get rid of the tax cut, the tax increase. Actually, of course, it was just the opposite. Nobody likes their taxes increased, and I don't think poor or middle-class people are particularly happy about the idea that we need to tax rich people more. I don't think Obama garnered many votes. I guarantee you he lost more votes than he got through that. Even people like Joe the Plumber, right? A guy earning less than $100,000 a year, he's told us, getting upset that those that earn $500,000 a year might have to pay a little bit more taxes, right? So, you know. So Mike's view, and the view of most Republicans, is Obama needs to take it slow. He needs to be bipartisan. He needs to reach out to Republicans. He needs to play toward the middle. Because we are, as Mike Lane and Fox News and talk radio and Rush Limbaugh, when I say talk radio, of course, I exempt the horn and the few of us that don't belong to right-wing talk radio. But the Fox Propaganda Channel, Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, will tell you again and again and again, we are a center-right country. And if the Democrats go too far, boom, what will happen to Obama is what happened to Bill Clinton in 1994. The Republicans will take over again in 2010, and that'll be the end of the great experiment. That is Obama. I couldn't disagree more. I say, Obama, take your engines and move full steam ahead. If we've got some Republicans that want to join us, terrific. We're glad to have you along for the ride. But you're on our boat now. The Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate are greater than any we've seen since the Jimmy Carter era, when, let's face it, the Democratic Party was a very, very different party. At that time, we had a lot of conservatives in the party. It may be hard to believe, but yes, we did. In the 1970s, the Democratic Party was not the liberal or progressive party. It was the Democratic Party. It was a mixture of the, yes, some progressives, no question about it, some liberals, and a lot of old-time Southern conservatives, dating back to the pre-civil rights days, when the Democratic Party was the party of the Confederacy and the Republican Party was the party of Abraham Lincoln. So the 1970s were much more mixed than we have today. We have a hefty majority. It looks like, the numbers still aren't complete. But it looks like we're going to have at least a 70, more likely an 80 vote margin in the House of Representatives. That's a pretty good margin. And yes, there are some blue dog Democrats, but most of them are not conservative. Socially, they're not for restricting people's freedoms so much as they believe in being careful about deficit spending. And, you know, in the aggregate, I support them for that. In the long run, I think we do have to worry about deficit spending, as I've told you often in my recounting of the biblical tale of Joseph's dream to the Pharaoh, right? The Pharaoh's dream, I should say, to Joseph. The idea that you have to save the 7 fat cows. For the 7 lean years that are coming afterwards. But as an economist, I can tell you that that would be the wrong strategy in the next 2 years, or at least as long as this recession that is bordering on a depression may last. Since I learned long ago in my economics classes at Harvard from the works of such greats as John Maynard Keynes, there is a time for deficit spending, and that time is now. Our economy is collapsing around us. Everything from the American automobile industry to, you know, Circuit City. We're in trouble, big trouble. And this is when we need a lot of deficit spending. So this is a great time for full speed ahead. This is a great time for spending, not on Halliburton, not on Iraq. One of the great misnomers of Republicans, if you talk to people like Mike Lane, they'll tell you why the Republicans lost. Because the Republicans lost their way. Because they ended up with big spending, as if this is something Republicans don't like. As if they haven't noticed that Republicans always like big spending. It's just they want big spending on other priorities. Right? Republicans are not against big spending. They'll tell you they are, but they're lying. Republicans love big spending. Big spending on Halliburton, big spending on Exxon, big spending on rich people, big spending on giving a bunch of money to give out to the streets in Iraq, big spending on the spies they have in various countries. They're not against big spending. They're against big spending on the American people. Oh, they don't want to spend on health care. They don't want to spend on education. They don't want to spend on the environment. They don't want to spend on using an energy policy to get off of foreign oil. No, they don't want to spend on Americans. They wanted to spend on the defense industry. Actually, if you look at George Bush's reign over the last 8 years, it may surprise you to know that if you exempt defense and you exempt his tax cuts to the rich, the domestic spending on education, healthcare, infrastructure has gone down. Maybe it won't surprise you. Just take out defense and homeland security, and you'll see that we are declining in spending. Maybe that's why bridges in Minnesota are falling to the ground. Well, we're building up Iraq's infrastructure, so we could be happy about that. So Obama is getting contrary advice. Liberals with pent-up needs that we've suffered, really, since 94. I mean, it's under Clinton, there was only so much we could do with a Republican Congress. In some ways, we haven't had this kind of power since the 60s, since Lyndon Johnson had the power. We've got a lot of needs in this country. We need infrastructure. We need bridges. We need roads. We need alternative forms of transportation. We need an energy policy, and that's going to cost money to get us off of oil. We need education. We need every kid to have a chance to go to college. And, yes, of course, we need health care. We have needs. And liberals are going to push our Congress, and now I can safely say our Congress, to meet those needs. And we're going to push the president as well. Republicans are saying slow down. Slow down. They're going to say we're against big spending. It's not true, as we pointed out. They love big spending on Halliburton and Exxon and billions of dollars thrown in cash lost in a bunch of trailer tractors in Iraq. They just don't want to spend on Americans. And they're going to say, no, don't spend on Americans. We need to spend on foreigners. Well, they won't quite put it like that. But they're going to be against the big spending. And you're going to have people like Mike Lane saying, well, if he wants to work with Republicans, he's just going to have to slow down. I say no. Full speed ahead. Now, that doesn't mean, and I don't agree with, gratuitously insulting Republicans. I don't think that makes any sense. It doesn't achieve anything. One of the things that Ronald Reagan very smartly did, and in many ways I have to say, I can see Obama following Ronald Reagan's playbook. Ronald Reagan was an unrepentant conservative. He moved this country hard to the right. But he always did so with a smile. And he brought not a few Democrats aboard. Remember the Reagan Democrats? Because he didn't gratuitously insult us. Right? It was only later with the Pat Buchanans and the Sarah Palins and even John McCain's campaign and of course Karl Rove and Dick Cheney, and they're the ones who started saying Democrats are un-American or not real American or terrorists, or, you know, Joe McCarthy calling us communists, John McCain calling us socialists, and all this name-calling, tearing America apart, that's Karl Rove. That's not Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan understood that you can pull people in your direction if you do so with a smile. And I think Obama gets that, too. I really think he gets that. So as long as Republicans want to join us on the progressive boat, come right along. And it's for this reason, and I know that a lot of Democrats disagree with me, that we, you know, we got to be careful about Joe Lieberman. We need his vote. Now, if it were up to me, I would push him to some lesser-known committee. You know, let him run a committee, not Homeland Security, something Small Business Administration or something tiny like that. But we need his vote. We need everyone's vote. We've got three races that are out to get to 60, and I got to tell you, I don't think we're going to do it. We might do it in Alaska. It'll be interesting to see where the 91,000 absentee votes still uncounted. I have to say, if there's any kind of shenanigans going on, I think it's going on in Alaska, the home of Ted Stevens, the home of Don Young. I mean, how many people vote in Alaska anyway? Right? It's a tiny state. It's about the size of the District of Columbia. Oh, it's huge in land. It's massive. But the people? Well, you could fit them all in the district. But what do we have? I think it's like 120-something thousand to 120-something thousand, and 3,000 votes separating the convicted felon Ted Stevens from Mark Begich. Stevens is ahead. So in a race of 120-something, there's still 90,000 uncounted votes. Something smells in Alaska. But Alaska's got Republican everything, right? It's not just the governor, Secretary of State, elections officials, legislature. We can't ask for a fair shake in Alaska. So, you know, I don't know. I would think Begich would win, but I would think that ordinary Americans would throw out a convicted felon, whether it's Stevens on the right or, frankly, William Jefferson on the left, the African-American congressman out of Louisiana, the Democrat, who had $90,000 in his freezer. I like to think the Democrats would have voted against him. Just like I like to think the Republicans would have voted against Stevens. Apparently I'm wrong. Apparently people still vote for felons. So I have some hope for Alaska, but we'll see. I got a little more hope in Minnesota, where Al Franken is 206 votes behind, just 206 votes behind an election where several million people cast their ballots. And it appears that from the outside ballots, I think Franken has a chance. And, of course, the third undecided Senate race is in Georgia, where they have a runoff. That one, my friends, is very tough. Very tough. Let's face it. Georgia didn't vote for Obama. He came close. Came real close in Georgia, but he lost. And I don't see why the Senate candidate would do better than Obama. I mean, first of all, I don't think we're going to get that kind of huge African-American vote that we got on Election Day in the runoff. I just don't think that blacks are going to come out in the same numbers. And even if they did come out in the same numbers, we still lost the race for Obama. You know, Georgia's going to be really tough. It'll be interesting to see if Obama puts his prestige on the line going down and campaigning for Jim Martin, which is the only way he'll win. But even if he does, I think it's unlikely. I think we're unlikely to win in Georgia. So we're not going to get to 60, I don't think. I'll be the first to proudly admit I'm wrong and drink champagne if we do. But Minnesota's quite possible. Alaska's still quite possible. Georgia, that one's tough. That one's tough. So we're going to need some Republicans to come along the way. Luckily, there are still a few moderate Republicans in the Northeast. I'm talking to you, Olympia Snow of Maine, and you, Susan Collins of Maine. And even our inspector of Pennsylvania sometimes can be counted on to do the right thing. If Coleman wins in Minnesota, he's from a liberal state. Indeed, I think the only reason why it's close is because most people can't stand Al Franken, not because Coleman represents the views of Minnesotans. But he will have to watch it and join to stop Republican filibusters. I think we'll have enough. Notwithstanding whatever happens in the out three races, I don't think we'll have too many Republican filibusters stopping us. We may have a few. We'll see. The point is we need to move full speed ahead, as far ahead as we could. I've been one who's been saying for years now, and you've heard me, that, you know, Nancy Pelosi just can't do it alone. She can't impeach the president alone because we can't get a conviction in the Senate. You know, we can't get some of the things that we want because we just don't have the votes. And a lot of people on the left get mad at me when I tell them that truth. And I say, hey, don't attack the messenger. We just don't have the votes. And that's true until January 3rd, 2009, where we will have the votes. We'll have the votes in the House. We'll pretty much have them in the Senate. You know, it'll be interesting to see what filibusters the Republicans join. But, you know, Maine is a pretty Democratic state, and if Susan Collins and Olympia Snowe don't represent the moderate middle of Maine that they are elected from, if they filibuster children's health care, they're going down. I don't think they will. They filibuster energy laws. Frankly, we have to do more. I, for one, as a resident of the greater Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, I want to see the District of Columbia become a state. We'll just call it Columbia. I want to see two senators and a congressman from that state having the right to vote in the Senate and the House. These are American citizens. They pay taxes. They should have representation. It's only fair. And please don't complain that it's small. Wyoming has fewer people. And if you say, well, it's a city, you know, it's unfair because other cities, well, it's in a special situation. It hasn't had representation for 200-some years. Maybe a little reparations are in order. And the fact that the majority of the population is black and we'd have two African-American senators, in all probability, it's just a bonus. Now, I would stick that through the Senate and the House. And that may be one that's filibustered. If we don't get the votes, I, for one, would be willing to compromise. My compromise would be that you get a House member because they have the people for a House member, and then that the D.C. people could vote with the people of Maryland for their two senators. It's by far my second choice, but it's better than nothing. And there may be real constitutional problems with it. I think what you'd have to do is you'd have to put in the amendment that if this is struck down, D.C. becomes a state or something to that effect. But I want to talk in general about the Obama era and where it leaves both parties, the Democrats and the Republicans. As I said, the Democrats are going to be split between the progressives and the moderates. But I think the American people have told us they want to try a real strong progressivism. I mean, this is a strong vote of confidence. Even the fact that he got 53.3% of the vote versus Bill Clinton's, you know, barely getting 49 or 50. This is a message to move forward. And move forward on a whole host of things. On gay rights, we've got to pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. A bill, by the way, that some 70 or 80% of Americans support. You shouldn't be able to fire someone because they're gay, period. You know, unless it's your church, and, you know, then you can fire anyone you want. You can fire someone for not, you know, believing the catechism. Of course, you can fire someone for being gay. You can fire someone for looking funny. I don't care. That's separation of church and state, and I respect it. But apart from that, you shouldn't be able to fire someone because they're gay, period. Hate crimes bills. If somebody commits a crime out of hate, because they hate a specific group of people, that has to be punished more than an ordinary crime. The classic example is burning a cross. If you go to your neighbor's yard and you burn some leaves on their property, that's arson. It's a misdemeanor. You'll probably just get a fine. And that's it. Because, I mean, what's the damage to the lawn? It's just a little patch of grass got burned. But if you burn a cross on your neighbor's lawn, the same amount of grass got burnt. I mean, you can reseed. The physical damage is minor. The emotional damage is severe. A hate crime is not just a crime on the individual who receives the crime. It is a crime on a whole group of people. When you burn a cross on your neighbor's yard, you're not just warning your neighbor or harming his property. You are threatening your neighbor and all African Americans who can see that cross. You're threatening them with violence. And a threat of violence is called an assault. And it is punishable. Did you know that? You may think assault is when you hit someone. That you'd be wrong. Any lawyer will tell you that's a battery. There's often assault and battery together. But assault is a threat to harm someone. A battery is the actual harm. And threatening to harm someone in America is a crime. If you tell your friend, and you mean it, I'm going to kill you, I'm going to hurt you, that's an assault. Don't do that. That's not free speech. I mean, jokes are allowed, but be careful. A hate crime is an assault. If you write, die, fag, in someone's yard. I mean, the vandalism? Minor offense. Minor offense. I mean, you know, probably just get rid of it with a hose. But it's an assault. That's something that the people who oppose hate crimes don't understand. When you crucify Matthew Shepard, you put him up on a fence to die. This isn't just about one man or two men taking the life of one young man. It's a sign to all gay people, we're going to kill you next. Same's true with the lynching. Hate crimes bills, I'm convinced, will pass under Barack Obama. I'm also convinced he's going to get rid of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. That silly compromise that Bill Clinton was sort of forced to do in his first part of his election because he didn't have the votes. We got the votes now. Let's get rid of this stupid policy. Most Americans are opposed to it. It's ridiculous. We have a huge shortage of people in the military. We're taking felons. We're taking people who commit violence. We're taking people without high school degrees. We're taking morons and violent felons into our military and kicking out some of the highest trained, smartest, best people we've got, most brave, courageous people, people like Alistair Gamble, who was literally the best Arabic translator in the country, fired because he's gay. That's going to end under Barack Obama. And the other thing I think is going to end, and this will take some work, and he's probably not going to do it in the first few months. Gay activists are just going to have to be patient. We're going to have to wait about 8-9 months. But we need to get rid of the, quote, Defense of Marriage Act, unquote, that awful document that is clearly unconstitutional, but we don't have a court to enforce it. The document that says that even if you are married legally in Massachusetts, the federal government will not accept your marriage, even if you are married legally in Connecticut. I hope to work on that. In healthcare, we're going to see for the first time in American history a substantial number of people covered. Most everyone who wants to be covered will be covered. That one's going to be tough, really tough. But for all the complaints about Hillary Clinton and healthcare and Bill Clinton, let's remember why the complaints are there. They're not there because people opposed the Clinton plan so much as because the Clinton plan never passed. It was seen as a failure of Clinton politically. He just didn't have the votes. And then, of course, people demagogued it and so forth. I think we've come a long way since 1993. On energy, Obama has made it clear that's his priority. And it should be. As Tom Friedman has written in his book, the country that determines the best energy technology of the future will be the strongest country on earth. If you want America to remain a superpower, we've got to stop borrowing money from the Chinese to pay the Saudi Arabians, who then funnel it to terrorists who come and kill Americans. I don't care whether the oil is coming from Russia or Venezuela or Saudi Arabia or Iran or even Iraq. I don't trust it. And I don't want to go for 6 months of oil and destroy the last pristine wilderness up in Alaska. Governor Palin may not appreciate it, but I do. We've got to get away from oil. And this is the first president since Jimmy Carter that has made it a priority. Only now we've learned a lot since the 70s. I think he will get a lot more support. So full speed ahead, America. Full speed ahead. It's fascinating to me that people like Republican strategist Mike Lane, and that's why I have him on the show, folks. For all I know, you hate to listen to him. It's important to know what the enemy is thinking. Or I should say, not the enemy. Okay, what the opposition is thinking. Thank you. I need to retract that. Just because Republicans call us un-American and terrorists, I don't have to call them my enemy, our misguided compatriot American. It's fascinating to see where the Republicans are going. It really is, as their party descends into incoherence. There was a poll taken by Democracy Corps right before the election, and they asked Republican voters, where do they think the Republican Party should go to in the next election? And they had two choices. Either, quote, the party needs to get back to Republican issues, unquote, or, quote, the party needs to find better ways to make America, the party needs to devise better ways to make government work for people make America secure and address new problems. So Republican voters were given a choice. Do they want the government to work for people, make America secure, and address new problems? Or do they want the party to get back to Republican issues? It was a landslide. 2-1 for rejecting making government work for people, rejecting making America secure, and rejecting addressing new problems. By a 2-1 margin, Republicans felt that the party needs to get back to Republican issues. So if 1/3 of Republicans actually see that the party is in need of change, 2/3 don't. Amazing, really. And you can see it in the majorities that want Obama to succeed. Some 2/3 of Americans now, polls from 66 to 70%, think that Obama is going to be a very good president and are excited about him. That has to include a good slice, a third, of McCain voters. And good for them. We are glad to have them. Welcome, if you voted for John McCain and you are a Republican, welcome to our party. There are Reagan Democrats. There are Obama Republicans. We're glad to have you. Really. And I don't want anyone to attack them. We're glad to have you in our party, moving forward in a progressive direction. And if we take 1/3 of the Republican Party with us, all the better. As for the majority of Republicans and their leader, Sarah Palin, well, they're just heading downhill. And, you know, that's okay with me. Bob Kincaid and I were talking before the show about Sarah Palin, saying something like, are we ever going to get rid of her? And I said, I hope not. I'm glad Sarah Palin's here. I think Sarah Palin can be credited with, at least 5% of the 7% margin of Obama's victory over McCain. I can't think of a better candidate for the Republicans to choose in 2012. As a Democrat, she makes my heart sing. You see, Sarah Palin is George Bush, Dick Cheney in a dress. She has the same competence level of George Bush. She has the same knowledge of world affairs as George Bush. Maybe not quite as much. He may know, in fact, George Bush probably knows that Africa is a continent. Sarah Palin apparently doesn't. You caught that, right? Now, after the election, Carl Cameron of Fox News, the Fox propaganda channel, don't blame the, you know, left media, don't blame the New York Times here, Carl Cameron of Fox propaganda news came out and said that McCain staffers, unnamed McCain staffers, had told him that in the debate prep, Sarah Palin repeatedly thought Africa was a country and not a continent. You know, I don't know about your third grader, but most third graders I know have learned that Africa is a continent. Maybe for some it takes till the fifth grade. I don't know if you heard Palin's response to this. This was really funny. They asked Palin, did you think Africa was a country and not a continent? And her response was, who told you that? Not yet. No. Who told you that? And they said, well, we have some McCain sources who are unnamed. And she said, well, I'm not going to dignify anything said by unnamed sources. And they said, okay, you don't have to dignify it, but can you tell us, did you know Africa was a continent and not a country? I'm not going to answer that question. No comment. I raised this with Mike Lane yesterday, and he insisted it wasn't true. But if it wasn't true, wouldn't she say, of course I know Africa is a continent. The story is ridiculous. And then she could go on to say, I'm not going to dignify anything said by unnamed sources. Isn't that what you'd say? I mean, if someone came up to you and said, you know, I've heard some of your colleagues, the people you work with, that you didn't know Africa was a continent, wouldn't you say that's ridiculous? Of course I know Africa is a continent. Who said that? Well, we can't tell you. Well, it's ridiculous. It's a lie. Of course I know. That's what you'd say. That's what any ordinary person would say. But what if you didn't know? What if you made the mistake? Well, then you don't want to lie and say, of course I knew, because then someone could come out and say, well, here's my name. You're lying, Sarah Palin. So she says, no comment. Wow. Apparently she also didn't know the countries in North America. Well, you know, most of North America is just three countries. Anyway, the Republican Party is turning to Sarah Palin, and I hope they do. I hope they do. I hope they choose her over Bobby Jindal. I mean, Bobby Jindal, I don't agree with him. He wants to teach, you know, the intelligent design, creationism, you know, the Bible in public schools instead of science. He's opposed to abortions. I don't like his policies, but, you know, he's somewhat intelligent. I grant him that. It's true. He is. I want them to have more Sarah Palins there. So Republicans are wringing their hands, and they're blaming, oh, I don't know, the media is too pro-Obama, or the Democrats are nasty, or Obama had too much money. Talk about sour grapes. Why did Obama have too much money? Is it because George Soros gave hundreds of millions of dollars to the Obama campaign? No. Obama had way more money than John McCain, because more than 3 million Americans gave him things like $25, $50. The problem with money in campaigns is not that it's expensive. The problem with money from private interest in campaigns is you think they're going to control the candidate, right? When you have somebody like Charles Keating financing John McCain's campaign to the tune of millions of dollars, as he did in Arizona way back when, the fear is that John McCain will give Charles Keating legislative favors, as he did way back when, by calling off the bank regulators. But is there any real fear that Obama's going to do anything untoward toward the 3 million Americans who gave him $25? Well, he is going to look out for the middle class. And there's nothing untoward about that. But Republicans, it's funny to watch them scratch their heads. Most of the time, like Mike Lane yesterday, they just complain. They just yell. They just, I still don't trust Obama. He's still palling around with terrorists. That's what Palin said just today on CNN. Oh, I'd work with Obama, Palin said, even though I don't like that he pals around with unrepentant domestic terrorists. But see, Republicans don't understand that trickle-down economics doesn't work, has never worked, can't work based on economic theory, because poor and middle-class people are the engines of the economy. There's a reason why John McCain said the fundamentals of the economy are strong. There's a reason why Mike Lane, 6 months ago, said we are nowhere near a recession, because they don't understand that their policies have led exactly to that. They don't understand that when middle-class people and poor people lose money, become poorer, as they did in the O's this decade we're in, that hurts everyone, even the rich. Kind of funny, isn't it? The rich did better under Bill Clinton when they were paying a bit more in taxes than they're doing today. The rich were doing better because their wealth is based in part on the wealth of all of us, right? A rising water level raises all boats, John F. Kennedy once said, right? Suggesting that if you help everyone, you know, the rich, the poor, everyone gets better. You know what? A descending water level harms all boats. If you punish the middle class, eventually even the rich get hurt. I'm reading polls, more Republican polls. This is another Democracy Corps poll. By a 17-point margin, Republicans attribute their party's failure in 2006 and 2008 to, quote, insufficient conservatism, unquote. Insufficient conservatism. Wow. They just don't get it. The majority of voters thought it was excessive conservatism. The majority of Republicans, by 17 points, thought it was insufficient conservatism. They're heading off further on the wrong path. Who am I to stop them? You know, when Democrats did that, when we moved too far to the left, we lost some votes. And I understand the need to have Obama Republicans in there. I'm not into gratuitously slapping anybody. The Democrats have moved, I think, to the center. I think we're different from the party of Jimmy Carter, frankly. And I think that's okay. I think Bill Clinton understood that. Bill Clinton reached out, and Obama has reached out to people in the center. I mean, Walter Mondale, God love him, made the biggest mistake he possibly could in 1984 when he said he was going to raise taxes. No Democrat will ever make that mistake. since Walter Mondale. It may be good policy. It's not good politics. But also the country has changed. Young people believe more in civil rights than they used to. For gay people, for black people, there's a reason why Obama was elected. And even though I'm distressed by what happened in California, it should be pointed out that, we lost 62-38 this same question 8 years ago. And now it's 52-48. So 10% have changed. And all we need is 2% more, and we win. And a lot of that has to do with, yes, gay people and black people talking to each other and gay black people talking out loud about their need for civil rights. But you look at someone like Sarah Palin, you think, well, there, if that's the future of the Republican Party has not rejected Bush at all. You know, it's funny. It's amazing to watch the Republican pundits on TV say, oh, well, you know, I never liked Bush anyway. That's a load of BS. They always liked Bush. They liked Bush until Americans told them they didn't like Bush. I mean, look at all the things that Palin is, just like Bush. She doesn't care about policy. He doesn't care about policy. She is certain she's right. He's certain he's right. She's got a bunch of cronies who she fills her government with. He's got a bunch of cronies that he fills his government with. As Jonathan Hyatt of the New Republic points out, even the fact that she has folksiness, masking incoherence, is just like George W. Bush. They misunderestimate me. Yeah, you betcha. Oh, I don't have to answer your questions. Isn't it cute that I'm an ignorant bum who doesn't know what I'm talking about? That's so cute. Come have a beer with me. And, make me your president. I think Americans are understanding that having a beer with the guy, that's not as important as having an intellectual as president. And the other thing that's really, I think, crucial about the Obama era that Americans are just starting to understand is that Obama has the intellectual vote. He has the educated vote. You know, I've been saying for a long time that Democrats are smarter than Republicans, more educated more than Republicans. Well, now we have the statistics that bear it out. I'm looking here at the vote of those with professional degrees for Obama, and it was 58%. That's dramatic. Right? I mean, this is a guy who didn't win the white vote. He barely lost it. But 58-40% of those with advanced degrees voted for Obama. 50-48% of those with college degrees voted for Obama. Minorities voted for Obama. Not just African Americans, Latinos, Asians. Jews voted for Obama even more than they voted for John Kerry. 78%. Making it the second largest minority to vote for Obama after African Americans. Women gave Obama the vote by some 20 points or so. Men by 1 point. Why women? Well, women now are entering the labor force, right? They are working and they want equal rights. They want civil rights. Our country is changing. We are no longer the center-right country that we may have been under Ronald Reagan. We are a country that is willing to look out for each other. If you look at Obama's rhetoric, yes, we can. It's all about joining with our fellow Americans to make change. It is the exact reverse of the selfishness of the Reagan-Bush era, which is over now. The Obama era is all about, what Jack Kennedy used to say, right? Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Ask what we together can do to make this a better country. And let's face it, the Republicans, the thing they're most complaining about is the economic implosion, right? I've heard them all say, well, that's the reason Obama's president, because the economy fell apart, without any indication that they are the ones who caused the economy to fall apart. But they're right. It did fall apart, and that does lead to to Obama being able to be the transformational president that Colin Powell said he would be, not just because he's black. There's been a lot of discussion about that, and I don't mean to underestimate that. That's very important. Very important for world relations, very important for a sign to African Americans that they have made it, that they can't blame all, you know, individual failures on racism, that racism still exists, but they can overcome it. When I think about just the role that Obama says in helping education, there are some African Americans, let's face it, who in some inner cities teach that education is a bad thing. There's even some that say education is a white thing and suggest that blacks need to do things like, you know, rappers and basketball players and all those role models. Well, now they have the President of the United States as a role model. And how did he achieve it? Not because he's got a good dunk shot, not because he knows a rapper rhyme, but because of education. This poor kid from a single mother who at one time was on welfare, studied hard, made good grades, and lo and behold became President of the United States. What a wonderful role model that is for African Americans, for all Americans. Frankly, the same way Bill Clinton was for poor whites. But it's more than that. Because of our economic distress, totally apart from the issue that you know, Obama's half black. Because of our intense economic distress, Obama can be like Franklin Roosevelt. He can be a transformational figure. The Obama era will be different from the Reagan era. I consider the Reagan era to be Reagan, Clinton, both Bushes. But Obama era will be like the Kennedy-Johnson era, or even more like the Roosevelt era, because, let's face it, if Americans have to embrace sustained, vital, transformative change, major change, a lot of times they need a crisis in order to do it. And we're in that kind of crisis right now. Meanwhile, the Republican Party is descending into a lot of where the Democratic Party was after the Civil War. It is the party of the Confederacy. It is the party of that brand of white Southerner and white Westerner that doesn't accept their fellow Americans as equals. And I think even that's dying. Even white Southerners are starting to get with the program. And that's a good thing for our country. But the old-time Confederates, I mean, they're not going to go away easily. As I said, two-thirds of Republicans think they aren't conservative enough. Sarah Palin thinks she hasn't gone far right enough. Only one-third of them are joining the steam train. The other two-thirds want to move the country far right. They haven't bashed gays enough. They haven't talked about atheists enough. Let them go there. And we'll have a real Obama landslide in 2010, 2012. I mean, just the fact that Kay Hagan has a seat once held by Jesse Helms, there's something beautiful in that. And you have to remember, and I firmly believe this, I've seen it too many times, this basic principle of psychology, of what happens when something really terrible happens to you. Some call it the six stages of dealing with death, or the six stages of tragedy. But it occurs not just with death, but for any awful thing that happens to human beings, and I've seen it too much to this isn't just pop psychology. I think it's absolutely true. Wait, excuse me, it's five stages. Oops, five stages. The five stages, of course, are denial, then anger, then bargaining, then sadness, and then acceptance. Five stages. Right now, the Republicans are in denial. Complete denial. We see it, right? The country had to move farther to the right, they say. The country shouldn't be concerned about doing things that help Americans or make our country secure or help the economy, but they need to focus more on Republican issues, which I presume means the traditional three, right? God, gays, and guns. We'll throw abortion in the God mix. Just doesn't begin with a G. So they're in denial right now, and next comes anger. And we've seen some anger already. We saw it in the Palin rallies. They are angry. They had a position of privilege for 100 years. I mean, ever since the end of the Civil War and the beginning of Jim Crow laws, you know, conservative, white, Southerners, those that are Bible belt and Bible thumping people, they've been in control. And no more so than in the last era, the Reagan era, and now in the Obama era, they're losing their privileges. And not only that, but the nastier they're getting, the more they're losing. There's something beautiful about that. Obama taught me a lesson. I for one, feared, particularly after what they did to John Kerry, swift-boating him, that we had to go negative in order to win. Obama showed that we didn't. And in fact, people got angry. The thing I've been waiting for all these years of my life, political years, Americans finally got upset at a negative campaign. The Republicans went too far. They overreached. They overreached in terms of the Constitution, right? Torturing people and throwing people in jail without trial and secret prisons. And the list goes on and on. Warrantless wiretapping. We all know the list. But even before George Bush, Newt Gingrich was overreaching. I mean, the whole impeaching Bill Clinton because he got some on the side. If we had to fire every politician in Washington who'd ever cheated on their spouse, I think there'd be four people left. Okay, that's excessive. But a good half could be thrown out for adultery. They went too far. And Americans saw that. And in doing so, I think they actually harmed themselves. And that's a good thing. Americans are seeing that a president who's cool under pressure, who's not erratic, who doesn't run around condemning everyone. See, that's the thing that's flummoxing Republicans, people like Mike Lane. Here, Obama has good progressive policies. But he's not attacking Republicans. He's not calling them names. He's barely mentioning Sarah Palin. He just sort of smiles when they call him a terrorist. He doesn't fight back in kind. Republicans know how to hit back someone who hits them hard. Bill Clinton knew how to hit below the belt. It's one of the reasons why I liked Bill Clinton, frankly, and feared for Al Gore. I always thought Al Gore was better than Bill Clinton, personally. I always did. And in fact, I hope and expect he will have a role in the future Obama administration. I think he should be the EPA chairman or, I don't know, Supreme Court Justice Al Gore has a nice ring to it. Attorney General Al Gore. Oh, there's lots of things he could do. He'll want to focus on the environment, probably EPA chairman. Energy Secretary. Energy Secretary Al Gore. Wow. But Al Gore didn't fight dirty the way Bill Clinton did. He didn't hit back the Republicans, and maybe our country wasn't ready for that at that time. And, of course, he didn't fight hard enough after he won the election of 2000. But he's a very good man. And after Bill Clinton succeeded and Gore didn't and Kerry didn't, I thought that maybe we just need to punch back harder. But Obama showed that you can win through hope and change and kindness and ignoring the attacks. It's amazing. Now, maybe it's only because of our traumatic economy. But it drives the Republicans batty. Really. They don't understand it. How can he genially reach out to them at the same time as, let's face it, he wants to move this country in a progressive direction? And the reason they can't understand it, I have to say, is the mirror image of how Democrats treated Ronald Reagan in the 80s. We would say, hey, he's far right. He's moving this country to the far right. He's a dangerous man. And Reagan would just smile and say, well, and Reagan Democrats hopped on board. Obama, for all of the comparison to Franklin Roosevelt in terms of the economy or Kennedy in terms of his youth and charm, I think he's more like Reagan. He is the inverse of Reagan. He's moving this country in a progressive direction, but he's doing so without insulting the Republicans. Bringing them on board. And I think that some of us on the left who've been angry, rightfully angry, justifiably angry, supporting the impeachment of Bush for so long, are going to have to give up some of our anger. Because we have to reach out to Republicans, yes, even Republicans, and have them join the Obama era. And I think that's okay. We're in a position of power now. We don't have to be disaffected and angry. We can reach out. We can do exactly what the Republicans didn't do when they were in power, which was reach out, divide America and be bitter and say nasty things. You know, after 2 months, we're going to be in charge. So I think we need to reach out to our fellow Americans, and I'm glad Obama did. And as much as it, you know, we don't have to reach out to Dick Cheney or George Bush. But, you know, poor ignorant souls like Joe the Plumber. I mean, there are people out there that just don't understand. And you know, when Joe the Plumber's out there, see that they actually are better off under Barack Obama. As long as we're not insulting and negative and tearing them apart and calling them un-American, we can bring some Republicans on board once they see that Obama helps them too. Now, to be clear, I am tolerant of those who disagree with me. I am not tolerant of those who are intolerant. If you disagree with Obama's tax plan, I'll talk to you. I'll try to convince you we're right. I'll smile. Put my arm around your shoulder and say we disagree, but we're both Americans. And the same is true if you disagree with Obama's health care plan. But if you disagree with civil rights, if you don't think gay people should have the same rights as straight people, if you don't think that women should be paid the same as men, if you don't think that African Americans should have all the opportunities that white Americans have, I'm not going to be your friend. I'm not going to put my arm around you. I'm not going to call you a good American and say we agree to disagree. I'm going to call you the bigot that you are. I have my limits. But I think those are important distinctions. There are people we can disagree with. They're called Republicans. And I think that by persuading them that Obama's right, you know, when the economy improves, we can say, look, see, it worked. Come on over to our side. It's okay. And it's going to shock a bunch of you, and I think most of you will disagree with me, but I'll say it. Even Joe Lieberman should be handled carefully. He was an apostate to our party. I wouldn't quite call him a Democrat. I think that's too much. But we're going to have to work with him until we outvote him 6 years from now, 5 years, 4 years from now. But we shouldn't be in the position of tearing people apart. We should understand what Ronald Reagan understood, that as long as people are moving in the right direction, the correct direction, the left direction, the progressive direction, we're happy you're on board. Lieberman will give us some of the votes we need for domestic policies, for health care, for civil rights for gay people. He's fine on those issues. And on military issues where Lieberman's dead wrong, we've got some Republicans that'll help us. Okay, we lose him on those. But I want to build an enduring coalition in the Obama era, a coalition that lasts into the generations, that lasts past the 8 years that I hope that Obama is president, into future generations. And to do that, we have to reach out to everyone. We have to reach out to the Clintons, to Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton did a tremendous job, even in attacking Obama. It is largely because of her attacks, I got to say, in the primaries, that it was like an inoculation, right? You know how an inoculation works. They give you a little bit of the disease, and it protects you when the real disease comes. Well, Hillary inoculated Obama against attacks of Jeremiah Wright and William Ayers. So Hillary Clinton has done a good thing. We need to help her. We need to recognize all of them. We need to bring us together into the Obama era. If we're going to bring hope and change and so forth, we have to recognize, I think, that if the Republican Party continues to go in the Mike Lane direction, further and further to the right, go. Be gone with you. We'll take the remnants, the educated ones, the ones that remain. And that's the future Obama era that I see. Hope you enjoyed the show. This is Mark Levine, signing off.